Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is the Writer's Lounge, show number 77. This is January 5th, 2015. I am your host, Tom Riddell, and shortly I'll be bringing out Robin Eduardo. Well, I'm not going to be bringing out Robin. She'll be bringing herself out. And then a brief intro to today's show. We're having on an author by the name of MJ Moores, and she's written Time's Tempest, The Chronicles of Xania. It's a fantasy epic, and I think you will enjoy talking to her or listening to her. And you can also give us a call here at the radio station at 626-243-5613 and toll free 877-878-1436. A little bit about who we are. We're the Writer's Lounge blog. It's located over at tomriddell.com/blog. And over there you can read all the reviews of the books that I've reviewed over the course of the last 2.5 years. And you can listen to the show as you read the reviews on the Blog Talk Radio player located in the upper left-hand corner of the page. Of course, we are on Facebook. Go over to the Blog Talk Radio site. Click on the link there for Facebook and also follow us on Twitter. You can contact us if you'd like to do that the old-fashioned way with the email at TWL11@yahoo.com. Upcoming guest authors. We're going to be taking a break here, but the next upcoming guest author is P.S. Bartlett on February 2nd. That would be Groundhog's Day. Can't wait for that. And then, of course, we're sponsored by Magic Pen Web Design. Offers its clients a simple, effective, and affordable approach to the website design development. Fill out the free estimate form over at magicpenwebdesign.com and let Magic Pen help you to sell that next book with a website design that works its magic for you. And, of course, I told you before, call us toll-free here at the show, 877-878-1436 and 626-213-5613. And, of course, this is where I introduce my wonderfully talented co-host, Robin Eduardo.
I don't know how talented I am, but thank you very much. You're always so sweet with the sweetness.
Well, I'm pouring it on, but
yes,
I'm telling
you are.
The truth. I'm telling
thank
the
you.
Truth. I Aww. Always tell the truth, Robin.
Yes,
you know
I
that.
Know this. I know it, but it's so complimentary. Tell me some more truth. Tell me more.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Yeah. And well, as you just heard me coughing here,
yeah.
So have you with this nasty.
Yeah.
I don't know what
both,
it is. It's crazy,
yeah.
But mine is
a little
more
under
of
the
a
weather.
Sinus problem. Yeah. And
mm-hmm.
of course, here in Minnesota, mm-hmm. it's bone chilling out there. And I
mm-hmm.
went down to jury duty today. Didn't get in trial, but I was waiting for the bus outside in this sub-zero degree weather. So
oh, goodness.
It has taken a toll on me. I was not a happy camper, but I just got home a couple hours ago, and I'm all warm and toasty now.
Yeah. Yeah. The weather's really doing us all in. I know here in Jersey, And it would seem to be the exact opposite of what I'm about to say, because for us, and it's probably because of the forced air heat, very, very dry, but we've had so much rain. You know, when I mention that, and everybody's like, "But it's raining a lot. You should have a lot of moisture in the air." But it must be the forced air heat that's making us all, you know, that real dry sinus thing going on, and then the back of the throat thing, the tickle. It's not really, you know, like oh, I don't want to get gross, but you know what I mean. It's not that kind of cough. It's just a dry sinus cough thing going on.
It's a non-productive, term would be a non-productive cough.
Right. Yeah, so I'm in the same boat with you, I guess.
Yeah. So, and there's the tickle again. I'm going to have to mute here every now and then just to stop from having the cough go over the air here. But, yep, this is Minnesota, and we've got to deal with it.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to touch on something that's kind of... I want to say it's going viral. I don't know how viral it is, but it's definitely that's something that's being discussed amongst indie writers. I posted a video on my Facebook. I don't know if you saw that earlier today.
I did not.
Author. Oh, okay. Well, then I'll clue you in, because I think it's important for all our authors out there that are indie publishing to understand that there's some shenanigans going on out there, and we've heard of badly behaving authors and the Goodreads bullies and all that sort of thing, where people are, I guess, trying to undermine their competition with one-star review bombs and that sort of thing that's going on. Anyway, the author, Emily Goodwin, she wrote the novel Stay, and it's kind of, I guess it's kind of fantasy, romance, a little bit, there's sex scenes in it that are a little bit more than, I guess, romantic, barely crosses the line. There's nothing in the book, I didn't read the book, but from what I understand, what I can gather from other people, they're saying that there really was nothing in the novel. Amazon pulled it. Because they pulled the book due to a report of questionable content. And here's the thing.
I see.
Suppose, from what I understand, there was nothing really questionable in her scenes. And certainly we both know, as well as I'm sure every other indie author that's out there, you've heard of the dino porn and all that sort of thing going on.
Yep.
That's being published on Amazon. So, I mean, for her novel to be pulled... the novel's called Stay, and her it's Emily Goodwin. Just want to make sure that I mention her name and the name of the novel. Amazon's kind of being picky and choosy, but I'm not going to blame Amazon directly, because it really is my theory that it is a competing author in some sort of attempt at a zero-sum game. They're trying to undermine her because her work is becoming wildly successful, and you know, she had good reviews, and I believe Stay had been up for just for a little while, so definitely she was on the path to success. And it's just, my theory is that this is a new form of bullying going on.
That
someone has figured out. Not only can you try to undermine competing authors in your little jealous fits by one-starring, you know, posting fake one-star reviews, but now apparently you can abuse the report button that's on the actual product page. And because Amazon really doesn't have live eyes on anything,
right.
If there's enough reports, they'll take it down and they'll send a notification to the author. But once again, Amazon never really clearly and concisely points out what the problem is.
Right,
so you kind of
right.
have to guess where you went wrong, and you try to revise the book to edit whatever it is might be the questionable content, and re-upload it and hope that they will allow it to go back live. But in the meantime, you lose your ranking. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It really does...
Yep.
Yeah, it's just a horrible thing.
That kind of explains something that I went through And I think somebody was pushing the report button on some of my reviews. I won't mention the name because I'm not even going to give him credit for even saying his name here. But I think that's something that's, you know, something that should be mentioned to Amazon. And also, of course, I always say that the good reviews should stand alone. And now kind of outweigh the bad reviews.
Right. I mean, here's the thing. I don't consider necessarily what people post on Amazon. I don't really consider them reviews per se. They're more like customers' opinions.
Yes.
Which is fine. Which is fine as long as they're coming from genuine consumers, you know, that they are posting their opinions and everybody's entitled to their opinion, good, bad, or otherwise. But when somebody abuses certain functions in order to try to wreak some kind of havoc against a competing author or for whatever reason, maybe they pissed you off in a, I don't know, something, a group on Facebook or an internet forum, you know, you have to watch because there really are, unfortunately, there's a lot of, I call them BBAs, badly behaving authors that, I don't know, it's almost like a little game to them. And
well,
and
maybe it's
unfortunate maybe it's, that this goes on.
Maybe it's friends of authors that are doing it.
Oh, well, maybe for some, if they have a prior beef, an unresolved conflict or whatever, but I definitely know that there are competing authors because it has been discussed in at length over on Goodreads and in the Kindle Direct Publishing forums over on Amazon and other writers groups. And Emily Goodwin, she posted a video discussing exactly what happened to her. So, I mean, I'm sure if you go to YouTube and you Google, or not Google, listen to me, you're Googling on YouTube now. Put it in the search function, Emily Goodwin, and put in the search stay, and you should be able to find the video where she discusses what happens to her. And
it's on your page, right, Robin?
Yeah, I have the video on my page, but I'm saying for other our listeners out there that might not be friended to my page, it's pretty interesting what she has to say about it. And she, to this day, really does not know for sure what happened because Amazon, like I said, they don't have a live eye on it, and they have no clue when the report goes in. There's no real investigation. It's basically bots that look for certain keywords and things. And it's really, I mean, Amazon needs to do something to help us authors, because when we screw up, even if it is our fault, oftentimes we don't know what we did, and there's no real definition of what's allowed and what's not allowed. It's really vague in their explanation of what's allowed.
On my reviews that I do, I'm very honest, and I never attack anyone. I just speak my mind as I see it, and I try to be, you know, respectful and all of that. And of course, I would never attack somebody. But I noticed that some of my reviews that posted on Amazon, as I mentioned, were removed, and I often wondered why. So you make a good point.
Yeah.
We should know why.
Yeah, because they can click if you agree or don't agree, and then that downvotes. And if you get a number of people downvoting your review, sometimes it will result in being removed. But here's the thing. Anybody can create multiple accounts and downvote a review. The only way you could leave a review on Amazon, you don't necessarily have to buy the book, but you have to buy at least one item to leave a review through, you know, to buy an item through Amazon to be able to leave a review. However, to be able to downvote a review, you don't have to be a consumer at all. And anybody can create multiple fake accounts and accomplish, like I said, it's shenanigans. It really is. And I don't think that's fair, because I think Amazon should IP trace And any multiple accounts that are linked to the same IP, somehow, some way, like how they figure out authors leaving fake reviews on their own books. I mean, they do that,
right.
And they won't
right.
allow family or close friends, if they can establish a connection, they won't allow the review to stick. It might go up and stay up for a day, but eventually it'll get removed. If
yep.
they can do that, then they should also be able to establish when somebody creates multiple fake accounts in order to wreak havoc by downvoting people's reviews. So, it's a pretty interesting topic, and we could probably devote a whole show to it, but I just thought it was worth mentioning what's going
yep.
on right now with Emily Goodwin, because it's all over Facebook right now, and if you're a member of any writers' groups on Facebook, you've more than likely have heard about it.
Yep.
If you haven't been working all day, or in your case, in jury
yeah.
duty all day.
In jury duty, right.
Yeah.
So anyway, Robin, let's get on to the main event.
Yes.
Which is Time's Tempest, The Chronicles of Xenia. It was written by M.J. Morris and published by GWL Publishing in 2014. You may purchase it at Amazon.com/Kindle, and you can visit the author on Facebook. And here's the review that I left. This story is an adventure into the vast and dangerous deserts of another world. It's a brutal journey for a people searching for chronicles that could save their world. Their quest to survive the desert takes its tolls on many levels. Their bodies are pushed to the limit, and the knowledge they gain isn't all that pleasant either, but they are a determined group of people, and they march on searching for the truth. M.J. Morris brings us the tale of fantasy, and her use of description of place and development of characters held me to the story. She is a writer who knows her craft, and she is well on her way to giving us more. And with that, I would like to introduce to you and bring on the Writer's Lounge, M.J. Morris. M.J., you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much for having me, Tom.
Yes, and we have to ask you, first of all, I want to know that I pronounced your last name correct. And M.J., do you go by M.J. or do you go by another name?
Well, my author name is M.J. I am known by my friends as Melissa or Mel.
Oh, okay.
But in high school, I went by M.J. because there were a lot of girls in my year with the same name, and we all want to stand out when we're in high school. So
yeah, okay.
I just went with it, right?
Yeah, well,
Mary Jane does it with Spider-Man. Why not me?
Sure, absolutely. So we'll stay with MJ.
Okay.
Excuse me. And then Moores. Is it Moores or Moores?
You're right the first time. Moores.
Moores, okay. And if you wouldn't mind, could you read an excerpt from your book? And then after you read the excerpt, could you tell us a little bit more about yourself and what inspired you to become a writer?
Oh, I would love to. Okay, the piece that I would like to read takes place near the beginning. It's the main character, Taya, has just revealed some important information to her best friend, the reporter, Zace, and they're in a movie theater. Problem is, a massive earthquake starts, and this is picking up sort of just when both girls are trying to, or women, I should say, one is 19, one is 25, they're just trying to figure out how to help people get out alive. So here we go. The skylight buffet and atrium was obliterated, water sprayed from the sprinkler systems by the games area, falling just short of the fire that burned in the central kitchen. The scent of charred meat and fried plastic wrap singed my nostrils. Pools of useless water glistened with a deadly electrical charge. I looked up. The beta sun shone in a perfect blue sky through the jagged opening in the skylight. The ground around me, however, was littered with glass and still churned. Overhead sprinklers at the buffet had been disconnected when the glass ceiling shattered. The fire flared. Orange and blue whips of flame cracked and licked at the decimated kitchen. Openings to two of the other wings were sealed. Gouged and red-streaked limbs pushed through piles of rubble, grasping at the air. It swam in my peripheral vision. Survivors. I deked around live electrical wires by the gaming machines as they twitched and sparked near pools of sprinkler water. Shimmying by dense patches of glass and rubble on the floor, this ballet of the macabre etched itself into my subconscious. The ground dropped a third time. Desperate hands disappeared. I climbed a mass of fallen concrete and reinforcement girding to a spot just above the rubble-clogged hall. Clutching a protruding piece of gridwork above my head, I jumped up and kicked out. Meshwork dug into my palms and fingers. Gritting my teeth, I swallowed the dull throb of pain. Streams of blood, mixed with water, ran down my arms. I kicked and smashed the loose upper rubble with my heels, jarring my molars with every connection. On each backswing after impact, I drew my knees up and struck out again. A portion of the debris gave way. Hooking my legs over the bottom of the widening hole, I pulled myself into the darkness beyond. Two small children lay huddled next to a woman trapped by large chunks of debris. She was covered with streaks of blood. Two adolescents held on to a boy with a gash across his forehead. The kid was suspended between his friends on shaky legs. His eyes were not focusing, probably concussed. The passage behind them had vomited debris from the collapsed ceiling, blocking the way with a mass of concrete and metal. I pointed to the opening. The boys nodded. I picked up the kid with the concussion. The junior scrambled and crawled up the rubble toward the gap and waited for my help. I lifted the injured boy just as Zay's face appeared. A look passed between us. She was just as aware as I was of the lack of structural integrity in the walls surrounding us. Zay lifted the boy from my arms. Two swaths of blood stained his clothes where I had held him. I couldn't look at my hands. I couldn't let my own pain get in the way of what needed to be done. Using my arms as a lift, I heaved the other boys up and out of the chamber. I turned and tucked the two remaining smaller children up under my arms. They flailed about, first clutching at my clothes and hair and then pulling away to reach back for their mother. Finally, they clung to each other and wailed. I glanced at the mother. Her eyes were closed, but tears leaked from under her lashes as she pressed her lips together. Save who you can, then go back if there's time. Until now, I'd never had to use my emergency training. At least they won't ever feel abandoned. As long as they're alive, they can hate me all they want. Hush now. You have to let go of me and reach for the other lady. I sent the children through the opening to Zaith, one at a time. The building shook. I chanced one last glance at the woman on the floor. Turning, I scrambled back through the opening and perched on the ruins. I inhaled a deep breath. Salty sweat coated my lips. I wiped my face on my bare forearm, forgetting about the blood. My eyes refused to clear completely. Hazy, watery. A second breath shuddered through my body. You are the master of your destiny. You are in control. I dropped down. I landed beside Zaith and the five kids. We each picked up a small child. The junior supported their friend with the head wound. I motioned for everyone to douse themselves in the water from the sprinklers. With a sharp jerk of my head, Zaith and the others ran with me for the main entrance. The earth gave a final vicious shudder. The walls collapsed inward.
Very nice.
Yeah, so.
Oh, by the way, I'm Robin. Hi.
Hi, Robin.
Just popped
Sorry
in.
I didn't get a chance to say hello earlier.
That's okay. Very interesting, exciting too. Very descriptive writing, and I enjoyed the short that you read. Where did you get the idea for this story?
Well, if you can believe it, it was back in when Y2K was the big scare. So 1999, if you can believe it.
Yes.
Basically, my boyfriend at the time, now husband, he was one of the believers that, you know, things could possibly go for crap and the world mm-hmm. could be in a complete disaster, you know, with financially speaking, this, that, and the other thing.
Right.
You know, if everything didn't reset properly to
grid
the year
shutting
2000.
Down. Yeah.
And I was on the side of, they've known about it. Yeah, there's a concern. The government will fix it. The people who are in charge, they'll take care of it. I was a
uh-huh.
teenager at the time. I was very trusting. He's a couple
years
older than me. But, you know, still, it was really interesting to sort of see our division when it came
mm-hmm.
to this idea. And that New Year's Eve, I remember him being really, really concerned, like so much so that we couldn't even have a good time. And he was just brooding over this. And, of course, the next day everything was fine. But I thought to myself, what if it hadn't been fine?
Mm-hmm.
What if there really was something going on that was going to destroy everything we knew about our world and make us almost start from scratch again? And there was nothing we could do.
Yeah, interesting point.
So then from there, you know, the idea just started spinning and spinning. I was in college and university at the time, and probably about maybe a month later, I had so many ideas built up in my head that I just had to start putting them down on paper. And the Chronicles of Xania came about from there.
Wow, that is very interesting, and it's true because nobody knew what was going to happen at that time. It's the first time we've ever, well, I mean, as far as technology goes, that, you know, turning the century and the way that it was set up, you just didn't know what was going to happen. If everything was just going to shut down, and would they be able to get everything up and running, or, you know, would we be wandering around in total chaos and anarchy? I mean, that was the biggest fear right there. You know, if the banks shut down, people couldn't access that, and it would be a domino effect. And yeah.
Well, that's
very
just
cool.
It. I mean, computers run everything.
Mm-hmm.
They
mm-hmm.
monitor our missiles as well as our banks, right?
That's right.
They take
yep.
care of our lights, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's everything is so interconnected with technology these days that it really was a scare at the time.
Yeah. I'm a fan of zombie and post-apocalyptic fiction, so it does tie in because that's kind of our big, you know, what if thing is what's going to happen to society if everything breaks down and we do have to go back to, I mean, even emergency services, all of it, it would be the Wild West all over again. You couldn't call the police, you couldn't call an ambulance, and yeah, interesting.
Well,
go ahead. No, go ahead. Finish
I don't
what
necessarily
you were gonna say.
Look specifically at it doesn't quite get that far in book one. Mm-hmm. Basically, the earthquakes and everything that are happening,
mm-hmm.
it's sort of like we're going through climate change.
Yeah,
and
the precursor to...
Yes, this planet is also feeling a massive climate change, and they don't understand
mm-hmm.
why. And
mm-hmm.
while it's not technology-based, well, actually it is, but you don't find that out till later. They
well,
don't
right,
know
right,
technology-based
right.
As to what's going on with their world. They just know that something's happening. Half the people are split. They think that the government will take care of it, and the other half are just trying to figure out how to take care of it on their own. But, you know, and then this prophet, government dissenter, comes out and says that he has a plan, he knows the way, he can help find the truth. And everyone,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then it's like, what? So then you have, you know, split sides again. Do you believe? Do you not believe? Is this a matter of fate and destiny, or is there some truth behind, you know, what he says, what these chronicles could be? How can the past affect our future? And I sort of, that also brings in the idea of Nostradamus with, you know, his,
yes.
his predictions, you
yes.
know, and how we can read so much into them and say, oh, no, yeah, he was definitely talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
And you can look at it and go, well, yeah, but he could also have been talking about that
mm-hmm.
or neither, you know, just depending on how you look at it.
Right, it's all up to interpretation.
Yeah, so all of these things blended together sort of make up that world and what's going on. And
interesting.
It's kind of heady. By the time you get to the end, it's kind of a surprise, like,
yeah.
wow, really? Okay, that sort of makes sense. But I don't want
to it's almost like a parallel universe to our own.
That's
so
the
I
goal.
Would. Yes, and I think that the readers would definitely it would resonate with them because it's familiar. You're touching upon topics that really ring a bell, and hey, you know that it makes you those what is it that Arsenio Hall you said things that make you go you know.
Yes.
A lot of the much of the story takes place in the desert. What appeals to you about such a place?
Well, it's interesting. It just sort of came up. I've always loved the story, The Princess Bride.
Mm-hmm.
And while it doesn't take place in a desert at all, at one
right.
point in the forest, you know, the Buttercup does fall through some what they call silk sand.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of silk sand or some sort of, you know, sand that traps you always kind of intrigued me. And while I know that, it, you know, there are reasons for whether or not these kind of traps exist in, you know, today's deserts, I just sort of took it a step further and thought, well, what sort of place could be traversed that necessarily hasn't been done a lot of before? Because it has
mm-hmm.
been done before. I mean, the whole game
yeah.
series revolves around deserts.
Right,
a
right.
planet of deserts. And we have
right.
Tatooine in Star Wars.
Exactly.
So,
that's what I was
you know,
thinking of.
yeah, you know, and so... and they work, and people, you know, liked the idea, and I needed a sort of a wasteland, a vast space where people couldn't necessarily get through it with ease. And
mm-hmm.
it made, since the world has three suns, they're already used to living in a tropical environment, so having, you know, tropical forests or that sort of atmosphere didn't quite make sense. I didn't want to make it nautical. That might be coming about in book three.
Mm-hmm.
So it just, latching onto that idea of the sand and what that could do in the ancient chronicles and sort of the idea that our own world has a number of deserts around our equator. And if I'm
yes.
equating the two worlds, what if we
right,
could take it
right.
that one step further and, you know, the expansion. So I looked into and did a whole ton of research on deserts, and I became a little mini expert for a few years. I just sort of started lapping it up, and every little interesting nuance I could find about our own world, I used in their world, because so many people don't realize just how interesting the deserts are and
yes.
the weird sort of creatures and
mm-hmm.
and the way that they're, you know, even though you may call someplace a desert, it isn't all necessarily like the Sahara. There are
mm-hmm.
wastelands and the Mojave is so, you know, dramatically different, but yet it is still considered a desert. So
yes.
I had a lot of fun with that. That's why it was a little tidbit of an idea that just sort of took me away.
It makes sense. I used to live out in Mesa, Arizona, and it just, it's true. It's a unique environment, and there's so much going on because, like you said, many people will, they'll have a preconceived notion of what a desert is like based on their own, either their movies or something that they've read if they've never been to a desert before. So, for example, it was very surprising to me when I first moved out there that people can actually drown in a desert because they have monsoons with flash floods and things.
Yes.
And then there's also, it gets very cold at night. So you have people that suffer, that they get lost and they suffer hypothermia and things like that, that you would never imagine the dangers aside from animals and insects and plants and things like that are dangerous, just the environment itself. Wind storms come in because there's not many trees. It's scrub brush and trees. So when the wind blows, there's not much to sort of temper the force of the wind. And then the dryness, you have the dust that kicks up. And so a sandstorm could come through and, you know, you can't see a foot in front of your face. It's really amazing. So it's interesting that you chose that environment, and I'm glad you did, because even though deserts are featured in many other stories, often they don't go in depth about, you know, what's going on in the desert. It's just, let's set a scene and then add completely mythical creatures and things. So it's interesting that you're sort of drawing from true life to enhance your story and make it almost like a parallel universe. Very interesting. Character development. How did you develop your characters?
Well, that character development is always a very gradual process for me. I knew from the beginning that the main character was going to be a bit of a control freak, just because I am. I kind of, you know, always need to know what's going on in the situation and have a backup plan and know where, you know, where I'm at. And I don't try to do this overtly, but, you know, I've always got the wheels a-turning. And I thought that that would make for an interesting character to suddenly have her somewhere where she doesn't know what's going to happen next,
mm-hmm.
where she's having to rely on second and third hand old information because nobody has ever, you know, been out there since the Great Migration.
Right,
and
right.
Suddenly she's forced into this position where it's either her life or other people's lives at stake, depending on which decision she makes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's one of those moments where you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. And then it was sort of, okay, so now from there, she became quite ornery, I guess, to try and stay away from the B word. But, you know, she wanted to protect these people who are, you know, complete idiots for going out there in the first
uh-huh.
place. But, they've got this mission, they believe this guy, and, you know, here she is, the complete opposite. The person who's standing in their way is the one that's trying to help them get to where they're going. So the whole idea of contradictions, I thought, you know, would really sort of play into the dynamics of character. And, you know, particularly, of course, between the two main characters, Desmond and Taya, just, you know, from their standpoint on their belief. You know, he believes and she doesn't. The Chronicles will help, right, that they are out there,
mm-hmm.
that they exist.
Right.
And then there's, you know, she's very much against, I wanted her to be sort of a humanitarian, you know, wanting to make sure that, you know, people are safe and, you know, she never wants to see anybody hurt because of sort of what she went through in her childhood, being abandoned by her parents, living on the street, having to basically grow up by the age of eight,
in order
to take care of herself, right? And she never would want to wish any kind of hurt or harm on people. But at the same time, because she's been there and she knows sort of, she's got that mentality of, you know, been there, done that, when she sees people, you know, get themselves into these situations, she can't help but get frustrated and mad at them because they don't see how blind they're being.
Yeah, they
and
don't have
so
the benefit
they're, again,
of hindsight. Yeah.
Yeah, so then, you know, as it came along, so she's this really, she doesn't seem like the heartwarming type, but at the same time, she'll never let you, you know, she'll never let anybody get hurt if she can help it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's... That's why I was saying I really like the contradictions in sort of
mm-hmm.
who she was, and that came out more with every draft that I did, because in the early stages, a lot of it was still up in my head, and I hadn't got it down on the page. And the more
mm-hmm.
I talked to people about, you know, who she was and what they were doing and, you know, the progress and the development that she went through, dramatically different from the first draft to the last.
Well, that segues into the next question, actually, and I don't think that it's really asked enough because people are curious about writers' process and all that. How many drafts did you go through before publishing, and anything else that you might have to say about your own process?
Well, for me, since I started writing this particular story, when I was a teenager, I was 17 or 18 at the time, I still had a lot of learning to do as
mm-hmm.
far as the craft. So I'd been writing stories since I was 9 years old. I fell in love with it,
right.
You know, in grade four, with the, you know, had the right teacher, right time, right place kind of thing, and
mm-hmm.
was addicted to it ever since. But it wasn't until I got into college when I started taking creative writing courses and entering, you know, the contests that were being held and different things for short stories,
right,
that I started actually learning more about how to develop plot, how to dig more into character, and so on and so forth. So every year that I was in school, I took more and more courses relating to English and writing and grammar, and that's sort of what I eventually changed majors, went to university instead of the community college, became a teacher, English and drama, and particularly because I focused on those areas, the drama helped me understand my characters more, and the English helped me express in writing what I wanted to be able to achieve. So by the time I was finished, nobody's ever finished their learning, but by the time I got the basics down,
good
by
point,
the time
though.
I got the basics down and I felt confident in my ability, I would guess I'd gone through at least 9 drafts, and then I did one more draft with my writer's group that I had joined about 5 years ago. So we worked about a year through my book, just bringing in a chapter at a time, meeting with the writer's group, and that was a new perspective again, having other authors, some who were published, some not, giving me feedback instead of just teachers and peers in my class.
Yes.
And then that was a whole new dynamic and learning experience as well. By the time that was finished, I felt that I was at the point when I could launch the book to see if agents, small publishers, would pick it up. And after about 3 months to a year, sorry to say 3 months, but a good solid 3 months of, you know, constantly every week handing out, sending out, you know, 2 or more inquiries and trying to reach out and find out, you know, so I've got my fair share of rejection letters. Finally, a small publisher said, "Hey, we like this idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why don't we go from there?" And then with my editor at GWL, we went through 3 more edits on that draft. One removed 17,000 words, and then another draft added 24,000 words. And then the end was just the tweaking of grammar and spelling and things like that. So, it's 10 to 12 drafts, I would say.
Yeah.
That was because it was book one, and I started when I was so young.
Right.
Book two, which will be coming out this summer, I'm almost finished writing it now. I'm going to go through and do my own personal edit. I'm going to have a writing buddy of mine read through it and give me feedback. And then I will submit it to my editor for the final tweaking. So drastically reduced number of drafts now that I sort of have a handle of what I'm doing. I know what's expected.
I think you do. You go through a process when you first start taking your writing seriously. And I don't mean that as a knock to anybody who is self-publishing, but I mean there's people who self-publish and just think that the very first draft is, oh, I got the story out and I'm just going to upload it and then just slap a cover together and all that, and then they wonder why, you know, well, how come I'm not getting any reviews and, you know, things are slow going.
Or I'm not getting the kind of reviews I hope for.
Yes. Well, I'm trying to be kind.
Yeah, I know.
it's true. There is a process, and I never really understood it myself when I first started. That whole thing about, you know, you have to pay your dues, you know, you have to go through this thing, you have to read a lot to be able to write well and that sort of thing and learning the craft and there's just so much, but you have to go through it because certainly you could watch, YouTube videos of surgery. It doesn't mean, you know, you could just pick up a scalpel and have at it. I'm going to be a surgeon now. Exactly. You know, so that's very interesting. And actually, it is mentioned in your bibliography on Amazon that you are also in the business of helping aspiring writers.
Yes.
So that's pretty cool. Can you tell us what are the positives and negatives of being an author in today's world? Because I have my own opinions, and I'm always talking about that sort of stuff, and it's good to hear it from other people who are, you know, have been through it.
Right.
So,
well,
yeah.
The same, what I'm about to say will go for both why, you know, the positives for authors today,
okay,
and the negatives, and that is good and bad, or for good or for bad,
mm-hmm,
with today's digital age, like you mentioned, getting published is so easy.
Yes.
You know, it's a matter of I've written it, I like it, click, it's published.
Yeah.
It's an ebook. It's, you know, done through CreateSpace or a similar platform where it's print on demand, and it's out there. And it could be done in less than a week. Some people probably
yeah
do it in 24 hours, you know. Sometimes it works out well if they do it that
yeah
fast. Often, as I'm sure you've experienced as well,
mm-hmm,
it doesn't. And I've been asked in the past 2 years to review a number of indie authors' works. And even before I got saddled with my editor at a publishing company, I knew that certain, yeah, it's hard to say errors, but certain things were being done in these works that the authors didn't realize were hampering the story. And
yeah
so it was clear to me that many indie authors needed help. Advice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't know what's going on. We're getting some feedback.
Some feedback, yeah.
Robin,
yeah.
Robin, do you hear me?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Oh,
you didn't
it
hear
cleared
me
up, so.
Yeah, I didn't. You guys didn't hear me on the microphone? I'm calling on.
No.
Oh.
I figured. I'm sorry. This doesn't usually happen. I've just figured that you muted because of your coughing thing. So I just
oh
continued asking the questions and just kept it going. So we
okay
didn't hear you.
You didn't, well, I just
walked right over you and took over the show.
Yeah, my microphone must be it must not be working because I did mute it, but then I brought it back and I'm just
oh well you're here now. You are
yeah
here now.
So
welcome
me,
back to your show, Tom.
Yes. Yeah, so, yeah.
Well, as you were saying, oh, no, go ahead.
Here. I'm going to go into the other room because I'm getting feedback if I'm in the studio.
Okay.
That's what it is.
So.
That happens.
Yeah,
yeah, sometimes.
Sorry for the delay, MJ.
Oh, I am.
But
that's
all right.
I am so sorry. So you were saying.
I thought that maybe oh I had entered the Twilight Zone or something. Because
ah
nowhere, it kept on
we lost
going
you.
And going.
We
yeah
lost
so anyway,
you out there.
Where are we at here? What was the last question that you asked, Robin?
Oh, Melissa was talking about the positives and negatives of being an author and sort of the process and all that, having an editor and. You could pick up where you left
yeah
off. I'm sorry, Melissa.
Yeah, no,
oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I was just sort of wrapping up.
Yeah.
So
basically, what I was getting at is so often, as we were talking, new indie authors don't necessarily realize that they need the extra help and guidance.
Yes,
and
another set of eyes.
I had, yeah, so, and I had done a lot of searching at the time to see what was available for free to help these people, or particularly editing at a
mm-hmm
discount, what professional editing was going for, because a lot of feedback that I was getting within authors groups, writers groups, was that a professional editor was far too expensive or way outside their budget, or they had, you know, no budget, that
yes.
all they really wanted was some sage advice, or, you know, somebody that they could get them to, you know, to help them out with a positive content edit. So that they were on the right track. And I'm like, okay, well, I can do this. I've been teaching high school for 10 years. I've looked into the business, and now I'm actually a part of it and going through editing myself. So I'm there. I know what's going on. I can help these people and hopefully try to bridge the gap so that they realize that, yeah, I can give them these professional services. I can give them a platform on which they can build, you know, their author portfolios and their author mm-hmm. their author platforms, and they can take advantage of this at free or reduced rates to help further them so that we get fewer books that are uploaded in 24 hours that haven't even been touched by another set of eyes other than the person who wrote them.
I got one thing to say to you, MJ, and it would be if Robin ever gets sick or anything, that I would like to have you on as a co-host, guest co-host, if you wouldn't mind. That would be something I think that you might like, and certainly other authors would enjoy your take on things. So you have a very good knowledge base there on writing.
Yeah, it's definitely it's a well-needed service, that's for sure, because so many authors really just – they don't know where to begin. They don't necessarily have, and I don't want to say that their beta readers are untrustworthy, but it's hard when they're your family and friends. You know, they're not really going to be, it's not that they're going to be dishonest, but there's definitely an impediment to giving the type of feedback that you really need to clean up your work, because oftentimes our eyes just cannot see the mistakes anymore. We've read the same thing over and over and over again that we're blinded to it.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yep. And I also want to ask you, MJ, Robin and I were talking a little bit about it before the show started, or right at the beginning of the show, in regards to reviews. How do good and bad reviews influence you?
Well, it was quite disheartening to hear about poor Emily. I hadn't been online today, so I'm definitely going to be looking into that after our conversation. But for the most part, for me, if I get a bad review, I take the advice that's been giving me in general, in that whether it's a one star that's, you know, malicious or not, it should be ignored.
Mm-hmm.
Hands down. You do not reply to it. You do not give any sort of feedback. You do not contact the person if you find a way to do that, whether it's on your own personal site or Amazon or Goodreads.
Mm-hmm.
You just leave it alone, because yes, like you mentioned, Robin, it's their opinion. Everybody's entitled to their opinion.
That's
as long as it's an honest and truthful one. What I would hope in a bad review is that somebody wouldn't just say, I hated it, and put a one star, but they would give some details as to, you know, what didn't really strike them, so that it lets other readers know what didn't work for them. At the same time, the 4- and 5-star reviews that I get, I basically say, okay, they will speak for me. They will speak for the book. The one or two bad reviews that I get will never outweigh, you know, the 5, 6, 7, you know, positives that are there. People will glance at them. But overall, if somebody's serious about learning about the kind of book that I write, they're going to focus more on the positive feedback, probably the 4-star reviews, because
mm-hmm.
those are the people who aren't gushing, like what
mm-hmm.
Tom provided, very solid, forthright, you know, solid read, and this is my opinion. And I think that those are the reviews that people pay more attention to.
That's
yep,
right. If
I
it's
agree.
A spite review, I think they stand out for exactly what they are. People are not stupid. They see
right.
it. They could see that. It, I mean, they see the venom in it if it is indeed venomous, because there's also authors who will say, oh, I received a malicious spite review, and then, you know, you go and you read it, and I don't see anything malicious in it. And actually, if it's, even if it's a negative review, if there's enough, you know, in the body of the review itself, they can point out things that maybe you as the author can use to improve upon. So I'm with you. Definitely don't reply to the reviews regardless, even if they're good reviews.
Right.
That could be a touchy thing, because people sometimes take that the wrong way.
Right.
It's a weird environment, and it's a minefield. You have to be careful.
Like I say, let the bad reviews stand, and
let the good
reviews stand, and let it be what it is. Because there's
a lot
more good people in the world than there are bad people. But, MJ, we've come to the end of the program here, and I just want to give you a little bit of time here to let everybody know where they can find you on the Internet.
Well, thank you. My author site is mjmoores.com, so it's just mjmoores.com, and that takes care of all my books. I have a number of free prequel stories available on various sites, Kobo, Kindle, you name it, through Smashwords, and they lead you into the story of The Chronicles of Zenea. They are little short prequels. I call them lost chapters. And, lots of fun, little adventures that the characters go on.
Nice.
Yeah, and then my site for new and emerging authors is infinite-pathways.org.
Very good, very good. Okay, MJ, thank you so much for being in the program. And I'm sorry for that little glitch here. I'm going to be working on trying to correct my microphone. And, Robin, I really appreciate you picking up. I was really wondering what was going on. But anyway, thank you again, MJ. And we'll be in touch, because I really enjoyed your take on not only your book, but on your writing skills as well. So you take care.
Thank you very much, Tom. And it was nice meeting you, Robin.
Thank you.
Take care now. Yep, bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, Robin.
Yeah?
Make sure I hit the right button here. And now I have to work the board here and find my closing song, as we usually play the song before we say goodnight.
Sometimes we have some interesting adventures.
It's been a wild and crazy day for me, and I wish I could do a reset, because it's really weird. So technical
it's
issues
right.
and coughing in the jury room and all kinds of things.
Yeah.
So, but we will see you on Groundhog Day, dear. And
goodness.
Will have on T.S. Bartlett will be back on our show.
Nice. As long as I don't get stuck in a loop of repeating Groundhog Day over and over and over again.
We'll see you later, folks. Bye-bye.
Good night.
In the middle of the day, your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. But it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. God spoke to Noah one beautiful morn. He said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds will part and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. Like it's rainbow weather. Yeah, it looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun peeking. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather.